Well, this is a tiny work, but it's an example of how size does not always equate with importance or indeed with quality. I'm looking now at Leighton's original oil sketch for one of the most famous images of the 19th century, Flaming June. The story of the finished painting reads like a fable of human folly, not because of anything which Leighton did, but because of the vagaries of taste. One of the legacies of modernism was an incapacity to appreciate Victorian art so complete that by the 1960s, when Flaming June came on the market, originally at a price, it said, of around £50, no museum director in England could be persuaded to purchase it. The picture was eventually acquired by the governor of Puerto Rico and so ended up in the Museum of Ponce in Puerto Rico. Nowadays, of course, Flaming June is recognised as one of the quintessential masterpieces of one of the greatest of British painters. It's one of the best known of all Victorian paintings, and yet, paradoxically, very few people have seen the original, and very few people could even tell you where it is. It's a remarkable thing, therefore, to be able to stand here in front of the original oil sketch for the painting. Almost everyone will have seen a reproduction, but here we have the real thing, albeit on a small scale, an intimate record of the artist's thoughts about the colour composition as he worked out this haunting image. According to Leighton's own account, the idea for Flaming June came to him when he saw a particularly supple model relaxing after a sitting. She coiled herself into this serpentine pose, and the artist took up his chalk and sketched her. I say her, assuming that the original model in question was female, but that is actually a matter of dispute. There are several drawings for Flaming June, and in some, the model looks as if it could be a young man. However, at quite an early stage, if not from the very beginning, it was decided that she should be female. When Leighton produced the oil sketch, he would already have worked out his figure in drawings. The sketch now gives him the opportunity to test his plans for the light effect, the dazzle reflected off the Mediterranean Ocean at midday, contrasted with the shade of the foreground under its awning. In the sketch, the fringe to this awning flutters in the breeze, catching the light and adding an element of animation along the top edge. This gets toned down in the finished painting. There, the awning becomes a simple horizontal line, animated only by a muted pattern on its inner side. But what it seems to me the oil sketch reveals so clearly is the very close attention paid by Leighton to the underlying formal structure of the image. The sketch is not about testing the effect of the composition in terms of its human drama. After all, there is no human drama. The woman is totally anonymous. We have no idea who she is, and she's asleep. So Leighton's concern is almost exclusively with the abstract pattern described by the woman's body and its surrounding draperies and other props. So in this, Leighton is very much allied with what is known as the aesthetic movement, the origins of which can be found in such works as Holman Hunt's Il Dolce Far Niente, also in this exhibition. For centuries, the Western tradition of painting had been primarily concerned with telling stories. Now, the narrative element was removed. In Hunt's work, there was still a wealth of incidental detail which invited us to construct our own narrative, but in Flaming June, Leighton really cuts the incidental detail to a minimum too. So, what we're left with is a purified form of art, one distilled from a tradition of narrative painting, but in which almost the only elements left are the components of a beautifully crafted abstract pattern. Of course, in the finished painting, it's much more evident that what we're looking at is a woman's body, alluring under its diaphanous draperies of indefinable colour. There, you find there's a sexual energy to the painting which makes of the spectator not just an aesthete, but also something of a voyeur. So, more buttons are being pressed than merely the aesthetic ones. But this is much less the case of the sketch, where it's the purely formal qualities of the composition which dominate. That matrix of horizontals and verticals, of squares and circles, of right-sloping and left-sloping diagonals, of hot against cold, dark against light. And so the irony is that this image, so despised by the era of modernism that in the 1960s you could hardly give it away, actually comes close to testing the boundaries of abstraction. We can see this now, but I don't think it's ever been so clear as it is in looking at this wonderfully sophisticated little sketch.